Helena is a fictional character, but what they went through is happening across Southeast today. This is their story. In one of the most deprived constituencies in England, experienced nurses who want to train as nurse practitioners cannot access the courses that would help them fill the gaps left by GP shortages. The training rooms sit empty while qualified healthcare workers leave the profession entirely. Helena tried to bridge that gap and found every door closed by the same excuse.
I became a nurse because I wanted to help people heal. Growing up in Bexhill, watching my mother care for elderly patients while my father built homes with his hands, I saw how much good you could do when you had the right skills and someone trusted you to use them. When I graduated from Canterbury Christ Church University in 2017 and started at Conquest Hospital as a Band 5-5 staff nurse, I thought the path ahead was clear. Work hard, learn more, take on greater responsibility, help more people. For 3 years, I watched that path crumble. Colleagues burned out and left faster than we could replace them. Waiting lists grew longer. Patients waited hours in corridors. I loved nursing, but I could see we needed more than just nurses. We needed nurse practitioners who could diagnose, prescribe, take some pressure off the few GPs left in Hastings. I had the experience. I wanted the responsibility. All I needed was the training. In 2020, I applied to Health Education England for their nurse practitioner program. I filled out every form, gathered every reference, wrote a personal statement explaining why this mattered. The East Kent Health Education England office called me 6 weeks later. "I'm sorry," the coordinator said, "but the program is fully subscribed due to budget constraints from NHS England." She sounded genuinely apologetic, like she was delivering news about the weather. "We simply don't have the funding for more places this year." I accepted it. It sounded reasonable. Training costs money. Money is limited. I would try again next year. In 2021, I applied again. Same forms, updated references, the same hope. This time the call came faster. "The situation has actually gotten worse," a different coordinator told me. "Treasury spending limits have reduced the number of funded places by 30%. We're having to turn away even more qualified candidates. Treasury spending limits." It sounded official, unchangeable, like a law of physics. I thanked her and hung up, frustrated but still understanding. The government had to make hard choices. Healthcare training was expensive. There wasn't enough money to go around. But I wasn't ready to give up. If Health Education England couldn't fund my training, maybe I could fund it myself. I called the University of Brighton and asked about their nurse practitioner course. "It's £18,000 for the full program," the admissions officer told me. "Most students use Health Education England funding, but you can self-fund if you prefer. £18,000 on a Band 5 salary, that was more than half my annual income. I applied for a career development loan anyway. The bank rejected me within a week." "Your salary is too low relative to the loan amount," they explained. "We cannot approve this level of borrowing." So, I was trapped. Health Education England said there was no money. The bank said I didn't earn enough money. The training I needed existed, but every door to it was locked. That's when I started paying attention to things that didn't fit. Walking past the University of Brighton's health faculty building one afternoon, I noticed something odd. The nurse practitioner training rooms were empty, not just quiet between classes, completely empty, with for lease signs taped to the windows. I asked the security guard what had happened. "Those rooms have been unused for months," he said. "The university had to stop offering some courses. Not enough funded places, apparently. Shame, really. People keep calling and asking about nurse practitioner training. But there's no money for courses. No money for courses." But the rooms existed. The university existed. The lecturers existed. I'd met some of them at conferences. The people who wanted the training existed. I was one of them. What exactly was it that there was no money for? I started asking around at work. How many nurses in Hastings wanted advanced training but couldn't get it? The answer surprised me. 12 of my neighbors were qualified nurses who had either moved to care work or left healthcare entirely. Not because they didn't want to work in the NHS, But because there were no career progression opportunities locally, Sarah, who lived three doors down from me, had been a Band 6 nurse for 8 years. She'd applied for the same nurse practitioner program I tried. She was now working in a care home for less money because she couldn't stand the frustration of staying still. Mark, across the street, had trained as a mental health nurse at the same university where those training rooms now sat empty. He'd wanted to specialize in crisis intervention. Same story. No funded places, couldn't afford to self-fund, eventually took a job with a private mental health company that paid better but served far fewer people, all of us ready to work, all of us ready to learn, all of us ready to fill exactly the gaps that everyone said needed filling, and all of us told the same thing, there is no money, but I'd seen the empty training rooms, I'd met the lecturers who wanted to teach, I talked to the patients who needed what we wanted to learn. The resources existed, the people existed, the need existed. What didn't exist was a willingness to connect them. That's when I began to understand something I had never questioned before. When someone says there is no money, what do they actually mean? The government that prints every note and mints every coin in this country told me it couldn't find enough of them to train the nurses who were standing right there, ready to work. The same government that found billions overnight for bank bailouts, that can always find money for tax cuts, that spent vast sums on programs that helped no one. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, they did. Whether the skills could be taught, they could. Whether the materials and buildings and lecturers were available, they were. All of them. Now I see it differently when I hear those words. There is no money means someone decided these people in this place for this purpose were not worth spending on. It's not an accounting problem. It's a political decision dressed as mathematics. I'm still a Band 5 nurse at Conquest Hospital. I still grow vegetables in the allotment behind my flat. Still cook the Polish dishes my mother taught me. But I understand now that what happened to me isn't my story alone. It's the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard was never bare. Someone just decided not to open it.
What Helena experienced has a name: fake experts. This technique relies on citing authorities who treat the household budget myth as unquestionable truth, as though repeating it makes it coil. Think of tobacco companies in the 1950s citing doctors who endorsed smoking, or pharmaceutical companies funding studies that happened to support their products. The technique is always the same. Find credentialed voices who will validate what you want people to believe. In Helena's case, every official who told her there is no money was repeating the same false premise that the UK government operates like a household, finding pounds before it can spend them. Treasury officials, NHS administrators, Health Education England coordinators, all treating this fiction as economic law. They cite unnamed economists who supposedly agree, without acknowledging that the profession is deeply divided on public spending. The specific objection Helena encountered was typical. Economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation. But which economists? The profession is split. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say, without naming them, is an appeal to unnamed authority. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources, people, skills, materials, time. In Helena's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Hastings and Rye rank 72 out of 543 English constituencies on the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, placing it in deprivation decile. 2. The constituency has 2,264 registered charities according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Total grants received through 360, giving grant NAV amount to £39.8 million. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.